condition right now. He is expected to survive his injuries. I know that you did not know about the severity of that crash when you first crossed the line and you had unplugged from your radio. What was your reaction when you did hear about the crash?
Yeah, well, so bad for one. I can tell you that. You know, we went out there and I kind of just did it there in the grass, but it was well before I knew anything. So, obviously, you know, crashes happen all the time at the end of the Daytona 500 and a lot of races in general. But, you know, we definitely didn't know the severity of it until afterwards. So, definitely still thinking about Ryan and his whole family. So, that's our main concern still at this point.
Denny Hamlin, my guest, you know, I was going to say to you, as a driver, you know how dangerous it can be, especially on that track. So when you hear that he is expected to survive, what kind of thoughts and feelings do you have? What's it like to hear that?
Yeah, I mean, it's great news, obviously, and you know, things are, you know, the news is getting encouraging, and that's a good thing. And we're just happy that, you know, all the safety equipment and everything worked out the way that it should. And, you know, he kind of hit in a, you know, the worst case possible scenario where, you know, you get turned upside down and then you get ran into kind of right into the roof. That's probably the most vulnerable spot of the car. So we're very fortunate, and hopefully has a speedy recovery.
Denny Hamlin joining us. So obviously that life can be very complicated. It is very dangerous. This is playing out and we know this, and you certainly want to acknowledge that. And so it's good news that he's going to recover and these are not life-threatening injuries. Now, you become the first driver since 1995 to win back-to-back titles at Daytona. What does it mean to hear that and to make that history?
Yeah, I mean, it's special. I don't even know, you know, how to put it in perspective at this point. I haven't had a lot of time to let it sink in. Being it just happened yesterday, but you know, definitely look forward to the time where I can kind of relax and you know, kind of look at the highlights, think about, you know, how it all went down, and you know, think about the great accomplishments that we had.
Denny Hamlin joining us. Now, that was the second closest race in Daytona history behind your win over Martin Truex Jr. back in 2016. So what was going through your head on that final lap?
Well, I mean, I was leading at the white flag, and the problem with that, and you would think that that would be the place that you want to be, but we were the lone Toyota. There were seven Fords that were right behind me, and I knew they were going to kind of gang up on the back straightaway there. So they did. They passed me, and then, you know, I got hooked to the rear bumper of Brian Blaney, and I knew my best opportunity was to push him towards the lead and then let those guys fight it out. Hopefully I kind of picked up the pieces, and that's kind of the way it played out. You know, we were able to make a great, you know, side draft there right at the line, kind of the slingshot pass, one and a close one.
Denny Hamlin going back-to-back, three in the last 5 years, in fact. And, Denny, I wonder, was there ever a point in time when you laid out the challenge in what you were dealing with yesterday, was there ever a point in time where you thought it's just not meant to be today, it's not going to happen, or because you previously won such a close race there, did you believe you'd find a way deep down?
Well, I thought on when I took the white, I thought I got a great shot. You know, 10 seconds later, I'm on the backstretch and they're motoring by me. I'm thinking, this is not good. I'm not going to win this. But as soon as I got latched on in turn three to Ryan Blaney's back bumper, I'm like, I'm going to send him somewhere. So we linked up, we pushed towards the lead, and I just, you know, barely had enough speed there right at the line to get him.
So, Denny, back-to-back titles for the first time in a long time, three in the last 5 years, as I mentioned. How do you explain the level of success that you have had in this race?
I can't. I mean, I keep thinking that we are defying odds. I mean, you know, there's so many wrecks that happened in the Daytona 500, especially over the last, you know, 6 or 7 years. And, you know, we just find ways to make it to the end with a shot to win. And we've been in this position now for you know, 3 or 4 years in a row being, you know, contending for the race win. We won three of them, and just, it's been a heck of a run. I really can't explain other than, you know, I feel like I'm a student of it, of the game. You know, there is a lot of skill that goes into, you know, being a good super speedway or plate racer, as they call it, at Daytona. And, it's just something that I've kind of latched onto.
Denny Hamlin joining us for a few more moments. I understand also that it's still sinking in, but when you make that point that you're a student of the game, like, how much have you grown as a driver, even in the last few years, as you've been dominating at Daytona?
All the time. I mean, they changed the rule package really this year from last year. It's a completely different, you know, aerodynamic package. So, you know, drafting is not just drafting. Like, you have to adapt your drafting style based off of how the car reacts. So I go to work on it. I learn a lot. I feel like I keep a lot of good notes, and it's equal to success so far.
You're a student of the game. Now, Danny, what about the weather delay and the postponement? How did you and the team go about approaching that delay and the postponement from Sunday to Monday?
Well, I mean, it's a little bit difficult, but it's something that, you know, you can't control. So you, as an athlete, you got to be ready at all times. And we knew some weather was coming, and we had the entire next day to kind of prepare and get kind of stretched back out again, get refocused right around lunchtime to go back green yesterday at 4 o'clock. So it was a lot easier than kind of restarting in the morning, in my opinion, because we had some time to kind of prepare. But overall, you know, delays are just part of what we do. It's one of the few sports that, you know, when it does rain, it puts things at a pause.
Yeah, I've got to ask you, because you're in it, it's probably tough to have a perspective, but that win gives you three, and the only other guys with at least three wins at Daytona are Jeff Gordon, Dale Jarrett, Bobby Allison, Cale Yarborough, and Richard Petty. I mean, absolute legends of the game. Has it sunk in yet that you're now a part of that group?
No, I still don't feel like I'm a part of that group. I mean, you're naming legends. You're naming Bird, Magic, Jordan. I mean, these guys are the best. And so I feel like I'm just kind of, you know, an odd name on that list. But, you know, I definitely don't take it for granted everything that we've got done.
Now, your crew chief, Chris Gabehart, told you before the race started on Sunday that it had been 25 years that somebody had repeated since then. In fact, he said he talks all the time about how you can make history. It's just up to the team to go out and do it. How much does that ability to make history motivate you? Is that part of your approach?
It is. I mean, you know, my crew chief, Chris Gabehart, does an amazing job of keeping me motivated and putting the stats in front of me and saying, you know, here's what we can do. Let's go get it. You know, let's go to work and get it done. So I can appreciate someone that, you know, stays on me to keep that motivation. It's easy after 15 years of doing this to, you know, kind of take your foot off the gas, so to speak. But, you know, we've been full at it now, and he's definitely the guy that keeps me going.
All right, so yesterday was the big win. Today you're doing some media, handling some business, and then you got to quickly shift your mind from winning the Daytona 500 to focusing on coming out here, coming out west, and running at Las Vegas on Sunday. Have you thought about that yet, and what kind of transition do you have to make?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a quick transition. I mean, I've already got notes in my mailbox that, like, things I've got to, you know, start studying for this weekend's race. So, I mean, the work never stops for us. It's no different than, you know, being on an NFL team or any other baseball team. There's a game tomorrow, there's a game next week that you got to prepare for as soon as your event's done today. So we're going to enjoy it. I'm going to get back home this evening, try to enjoy it with family, and try to unwind a little bit, and then it's off to work tomorrow.
He is the driver of the number 11 car for JGR, third Daytona win overall. The NASCAR Cup Series heads out west for its annual three-race West Coast swing. It starts Sunday at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. The Pennzoil 400 at 3:30 p.m. on Fox. Again, tickets and more information, NASCAR.com/tickets. Danny, it's great to have you back. Congrats on the win, and really nice to have you on the show.
All right, Jim. Always a pleasure.
You too.
Thank you.
Great talking to you, Danny. Thanks so much. Back-to-back Daytona 500 champion, three times in the last 5 years, and I made the point at the very top, there was some criticism of he and the team for celebrating that win. They had no idea. They had absolutely no idea the severity of Ryan Newman's crash, obviously, or they would never have been celebrating in that moment. They had no idea. There was so much going on. It was so chaotic. It happened so quickly, and believe me, these guys more, and you listen to Denny Hamlin, and you know he's all class. They know as well as anybody how dangerous that sport is, and there's a fundamental respect among drivers. I mean, certainly they're going to run hard. They're trying to win, but nobody on that team would have been celebrating anything had they known the severity of that injury, and he made that very clear. So that's back-to-back wins for him in 3 and 5 years. And as I mentioned, those are some really big names, legends of the game, Gordon, Jarrett, Allison, Yarborough, and Petty. Add to that list, Hamlin. And they're coming out west now. All right, still ahead. I've got an open segment next. And then in the final segment of the hour, Caleb Wesson, Ohio State Buckeyes junior center, is going to join us. I'm going to try and talk some Mets baseball when we come back. Yo Cespedes. I might talk Mets baseball. He's not. At least he's not talking to us. He's not talking to the media. I want to get into that. And Tim Tebow still grinding away, chasing the dream. Hey, guys, never a good look when you untuck a long, bulky dress shirt. Like, you think that it makes you look casual, but not really. You end up looking sloppy because that shirt was not made to be worn untucked. Untuck It does make shirts that are specifically designed to be worn that way. A casual shirt that's not too long, it's not too short, it is just right. Shirts designed so well that GQ calls them perfection. Untuck It shirts are a go-to for any occasion, from casual to dressy. They always work. Not only do they look good, they feel amazing. Even the wrinkle-free options. Untuck It offers 50 different fit combinations, in fact. That way, tall, short, slim, and bigger guys of all ages can experience that perfect-fitting shirt. All you have to do is log on to untuckit.com, check out all the new arrivals, use the promo code ROME, and get 20% off the entire first-time purchase that you make. If you want, you can walk into any of their over 80 retail locations across the country. Untuckit.com, your solution to perfecting casual. Use the promo code ROME and take 20% off your first-time purchase. Once again, untuckit.com, promo code ROME.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Got an open segment right here, so if you're waiting, you should call. If you're waiting, you should call, because there might not be any waiting for the right phone call. Hit me up. You want to thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. We are close. We are convenient. We are known for our guaranteed everyday low prices, excellent customer service from professional parts people that you know you can trust. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts today. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. You know what I'd love to see? You know how sometimes there's action and odds on the smack-off? There have been over the years. How about some action and odds on the tour stop announcement coming up? Who do you think is going to get the bounce-back tour stop? The rebooted tour stop? The first one in years? Hey, Nut. Stuck Nut. I haven't even looked at this myself. When was the last tour stop we had? Not a station visit, but an actual world tour event. Hey, XR4TI, wake the hell up over there. When was the last world tour event? All right, so if they were taking action, who would you get down on? Where do you think I'm going to go? Of all the markets, and we've got like 200 radio stations, affiliated markets, where do you think I'm going to go? Do you want it? What's your argument for it? Or if you don't really want it, or you're not concerned about that, and you had to get down, if you were a betting person, where would you bet? Where do you think I'm going to go when we reboot this thing? The announcement's coming up in a few days. Make sure you're there for it. 1-800-636-8686. All right, so the Mets have officially arrived. How do I know that? How do I know that? Because they've already got a player declaring that he will not talk to the media all season long. That's how I know the Mets are already here. You know, there's an old saying in baseball that usually accompanies the start of position players reporting to camp. You've heard it before. Hope springs eternal. You know, everybody is 0-0. Everybody has a chance. Everybody is happy. Except, of course, this year. And we've covered this already at great length. This year, everybody is not happy. In fact, this year, everybody is pissed. You know, all that flowery new beginning crap is now 100% thorn, 0% rose. Guys are not showing up with a smile on their face. Guys are showing up with a scowl. Guys are ready to find a mic and rip the Astros apart. At least one Atlanta Brave said they all deserve a beating. Every one of them deserves a beating. And every fan living outside the 713 is right behind them with their own pitchfork and torch. So, it's already been really hard to look ahead to the 2020 season when baseball is stuck in the ditch of 2017 and they're bleeding out. Speaking of ditches and living in the past, guess who's back with the Mets? The boar hunter himself, Yoenis Cespedes. You remember Yo, right? Yo, 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 let that ride, yo.
Yo.
Who said that? What famous moment did that come from on the show? Yo, yo, let that ride, yo. You got that, Alvy?
Gary, do you think the media's out to get you
guys? There it is.
Oh, yeah. Media, whatever image that the media gives you is what society will most likely have on you.
Yeah, but if a guy's out on the street and he's getting into trouble, you don't expect the media not to report it, do you?
Well, that's part of business, though. Somewhat of that, you got to keep your name clean, but you can be scarred by the media, but, you know, I just try to keep my nose clean and just live a regular life and don't get caught up into that.
Yeah, see, I was going to say, Gary, you have kept your nose clean. I mean, I don't hear any stories about Gary Trent sucking dope out of a Coke can or anything.
Yo, 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 let that ride. Yo, let that ride.
Yo, 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 let that ride. Yo, let that ride, yo. Gary Trent. Yo, 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 Cespedes, the former All-Star. Why am I talking about this? Because he stepped in a hole on his ranch in Florida while attempting to free a wild boar. He exploded his ankle. He missed all of 2019 and he voided 30 mil on his contract. As always, yo, hope that was worth it, but I know it wasn't. That Yoenis Cespedes, the same guy who has not played a full season since 2015. And has not played more than 81 games since 2016. If availability is your best ability, this dude's barely able. He showed up to camp yesterday, and by all accounts, he did look good. He did. And the media better get used to going off their eyes with this guy and not their ears, because he made it very clear. Whatever duct tape is holding him together is also going right over his mouth the start of the season, because he told reporters he is not talking to them. Quote, not today, not tomorrow, not at all this year, end quote. And when one journo tried to follow up with a quick why not, Cespedes replied, quote, because I don't want to, end quote. Excellent. Why answer questions about being a failed zookeeper when you don't have to? Why relive the horrors of tragically losing a showdown with a wild boar in the middle of a season when you don't want to? Yo, yo, I see you working, yo. In times like these, you got to place that anger and that disdain somewhere, right? You got to channel that somehow. Why not put it on the media? I mean, yes, it was you, yo, who was down on your ranch rehabbing two busted heels. And yes, it was you, yo, who decided that it would be a good time to go check out the boar traps. And yes, it was you, yo, who lit 30 mil on fire by refusing to stay off your feet during your paid time away to rest and get better. But why own any of that? Why take responsibility with the people who write the stories when you can just put it on them and tell them to jog on? Am I right, yo? For an entire season, no less. Not just for now, but for an entire season, which you did yesterday. I'll say this. As bad as that is, and it is, it still beats the alternative in that clubhouse. Remember last year, Jason Vargas tried to swing on a reporter. Remember that? Not only that, but he had the backing of Mickey Callaway, who was the second coming of Billy Martin. So maybe Yoenis Cespedes pleading the fifth is a blessing in disguise to everybody with a pen and a notepad who still wants their jaw intact after a simple Q&A. Or maybe it's just a really weak and soft move to avoid a few questions about jacking yourself up in the most jackwagon way imaginable. I don't know, maybe you sit down, maybe you spit out a few cliches and a few answers about the past being in the past. Let everybody read about your new, refocused energy on getting the Mets back to October. I don't know. Maybe you even come correct Maybe you even own it. This is crazy, but maybe you even apologize for it and be accountable for it and promise that you will never, ever explode your ankle ever again trying to release a wild boar on your property. And then maybe if you do those things, you actually get credit as somebody who has learned from the past. You're maturing. You're evolving. You're somebody who can be counted on. Yeah, that's not happening because owning it is just too hard. Instead, it's just another regrettable Mets headline where another star player is ducking any kind of accountability whatsoever. Probably best not to pick fights that you cannot win. And he's not going to win that fight with the media. If you're going to be that guy and miss that amount of time and miss it the way he did, you probably are better off not starting the year by saying, hey, everybody in the gathered media, I've got a statement. I'm not talking to any of you this year. If you're going to do that, if that's going to be your route, and you just want to let your game do the talking, man, you better be Babe Ruth. You better ball the hell out. Because a guy who is not speaking and is not producing is going to get wrecked by the Tabs. Because Tabs going to tab. You got to love this team, right? For as bad as they were last season, this offseason is not much better. The failed sale to Steve Cohen, the A-Rod as the new buyer rumors, and now the yo-yo vow of silence.
Yo.
Man, I just long for the simpler times of Mr. Met flipping the customers off and getting caught. And this young super fan lighting the manager on fire.
Terry, show some f***ing emotion, you old ass, silly ass man. I want to punch the f***ing out of you, knock your teeth out. Now, who's going to be smiling? I will. Never show a smile. I mean, when you do, you're spanking the teammates at you. You're spanking Michael Conforto's f***ing sorry ass. That's what you're doing. So, Terry, goodbye. Have Wally Backman come over here.
Man, I don't know that there's ever been anybody ever in the history of the world that wanted anything as much as that little kid wanted to win.
Wally Backman.
My man is breathing fire. That kid's incredible. The problem is, it makes me laugh every single time. But he starts off that entire rant by telling Terry he better not be smiling. And, like, I'm scared listening to the kid. I want to immediately stop smiling. But it makes me laugh every time I hear it because it's so good. Like, that kid's like, Van Smack, stop smiling.
Terry.
I'll knock your teeth out. And I believe him. Like, I really am afraid of that kid.
Let that boar ride,
yo. That guy lit 30 mil on fire. And for what? Back home, Burn on it. His ranch, supposedly resting, rehabbing, recovering, and exploded his ankle, freeing a wild boar from a trap? You can't make that up. When we return, Caleb Wesson. Bring that in here, Adam. This guy will do anything. Like, these are not even readable, but he's going to get that shirt on TV again, no matter what it means. All right, so I actually asked the question. Where do you think the rebooted tour stop is going to be? Rome, Albuquerque is where the tour stop's going down. 25 years, one damn dial, original four. War 610, the sports animal, Damasio. Man, there's something to that. There is something to that. Do not be surprised if that's what I come up with. Not only are they an original four affiliate, we've been on the same station the whole time. That's incredible. Hey, Jim, please tell me I've not missed your Yoko Ono birthday routine. Jim in Wisconsin. Jim, you missed it. You missed it. Caleb Wesson when we come back. But first up, here's a sports update for you. Once again, I'm looking for your guesses. We're going to reboot the World Tour. Where do you think it's going to be? The announcement before the end of the week. As promised, we are joined right now by a center for Ohio State. Preseason All Big Ten player. 13 points, 8 boards, 4 assists, 4 steals in Saturday's win over Purdue. averaging more than 14 points and 9 rebounds per game. Ohio State's currently number 24 in the coaches poll. They're 17-8. They're 7-7 in Big Ten play. And they've got a big one at number 20, Iowa, on Thursday night. We are joined by Caleb Wesson. Caleb, it's good to have you on the show. How are you?
Good. You?
Good, man. I'm great. I read your stats. You had a really big game in that win against Purdue where you were huge in all facets of the game. So let me start right there. That might have been some of your best defense all season long. What was your mindset, or what was the mindset of the entire team going into that game? And then how good did it feel to win the way you did?
Oh, it felt great. You know, all week we were preaching details and how detailed could we be. And I feel like me and our guys, we locked in really on the scouting report and the way they run their plays, and I feel we executed.
And you look at the season, it's a really challenging conference, obviously. If we were to go back, the team was number 5 in the country back in the middle of December, but then you dropped 4 straight and 6 of 7. At that point in the season, how would you describe where the team was, and what was your mindset then?
Then, you know, the confidence was down. You know, you lose a couple games, and guys start wondering where their roles are and how they affect the game, and I feel like we just got back to we were. You know, our coaches talked about roles and how we're going to execute, and, you know, we really locked in. You know, we came back closer as a family and as a group, and I feel like that really helped us.
In fact, that's what happened. The team turns it around. You win 5 of the last 6. So what was the biggest difference, other than communicating that to one another? What was the biggest difference on the floor in turning it around the way you have?
Oh, just our confidence in everything we do, you know, even on defense and our ability to guard one-on-one and guard your yards. You know, I feel like we got away from that, and that's what we pride ourselves on, is our defense.
Caleb Wesson joining us. Now, last season, when the season ended, you put your name into the draft, and you worked out with the Hawks and the Celtics. What was that experience like, and how did those workouts go for you?
It was a blessing. You know, the first one, I mean, it was kind of a struggle, you know, just getting used to that pace and that level of play at a high level like that. But I feel like in the Hawks one, I shot the ball pretty well. I was more confident, more comfortable in the situation and my environment, and I feel like I did pretty well.
You know, your process and your journey has been really interesting. Like you said, that when you arrived at school, you were in the neighborhood of 300 pounds with a 25% body fat. It's something you've been working on. But one of the things that the NBA workouts told you was you could play in the NBA, but they wanted to see you at a certain body mass index. What was it like to learn that? And then how'd you go about in responding to that information?
Oh, I took it to heart. You know, that's not really the first time I've heard that. I've heard that before in the USA camp, you know, the junior team. They told me that my skill level was there and that I was talented enough, but they didn't know how long I could play for that extended period at that level, you know. So hearing that from somewhere I really want to go as far as the NBA and the next level, that really hit my heart, and I feel like I focused in on that with all you, right, and even my off-campus trainers and IBT trainers.
I was going to say, excuse me for jumping in, but I want to give the listeners an idea what you did. You went to work now. You went to work on your diet.
Yeah.
You cut out juice. You cut out soda. You did extra workouts. The strength and conditioning staff talk about how much you love boxing workouts to the point where they sometimes don't like holding the pads because you hit so hard. What's that experience been like?
Oh, you know, it's fun. You know, my brother also got into it, which helps me having somebody in there with me to work and just being able to share experiences with. And I feel like that just even pushed me even more, seeing my brother wanting to be great just as much as I want to be.
I definitely want to talk to you about Andre. I'm going to talk to you about him in 1 minute. There is one famous story now, though, about a teammate who offered you a kale chip. What did you make of kale chips?
Oh, it was disgusting. No offense to anybody who eats them, but I don't know how they do it. I just not miss my palate.
They were disgusting. Caleb Wesson is joining us. Chris Holtmann, that's funny. He talked about a game Chris Holtmann did earlier this year where you played 36 minutes, and then after the game, you spent 40 minutes more on the rower. So with all this work you're putting in, how much of a difference are you noticing on the floor because of all that work?
Oh, like I said, just being able to play at that high level for longer. You know, I see myself getting more rebounds, being more active on defense for longer periods of time, and I feel like it really helps our team, being able to stay on the floor without foul trouble and stuff like that, playing at that high level.
Now, you played your high school ball at Westerville South, and you grew up 20 minutes from Columbus. Your dad, Keith, played ball at Ohio State in the 80s. How huge was Ohio State and the Buckeyes in your house growing up?
Huge. That's my whole family's team, is Ohio State. You know, a lot of my family went to Kent State, and everybody's kind of from that Ohio area. But, you know, just being able to play at this university with all my family, being able to come to games and watch, not being that far away, it's a blessing.
Right, so, Andre, your brother, also plays at Ohio State, but what did the two of you learn from your dad about basketball when you were growing up, and what kind of a ball player was he? Did you know?
Just the fundamentals. You know, my dad really wasn't the most skilled guy on the floor or scored the most points or anything, but, you know, he did his job at the highest level. You know, he played his role, and he taught us fundamentals and the things like setting good screens, passing, getting boxed out position. I feel like that really helped me and Andre as far as development goes.
Caleb Wesson, my guest for a few more moments. Now, your mom, Stephanie, says that you and Andre could not be more different. Like, how would you describe Andre, and how would you describe yourself? Are you two guys really that different?
Yeah, in a lot of aspects. You know, Andre's more of a quiet guy. He's not really going to say much, but he's going to show in his actions on the court, whereas me, I'm more of an upbeat guy. I'm talking all the time. I show a lot of emotion on the court, and I feel like that's what it is. You know, even growing up, you could see me and Andre were kind of different in the things we did. He was more of a into sports at a young age kind of guy. I was more into music and other things like that.
So when you guys were growing up, how hard did you guys go at each other on the court?
Oh, yeah, those were battles. One-on-one with no refs, those were battles right there, you know, arguing calls, just playing real aggressive. My mom and dad would have to tell us to come outside and calm down sometimes because we're yelling all throughout the street. The whole street can hear us yelling at each other. It was just crazy.
All right, so the story goes that Andre was being recruited heavily, but it wasn't by the biggest programs, and then he had that huge senior season, and then you have programs like Texas and Ohio State that are coming. You've said that you were telling him you could both play at Ohio State, that could work, but when it came time for National Signing Day, he was wearing a black jacket, and he would not tell you what shirt he had underneath. What do you remember about that day?
No, that day was crazy. You know, everybody's coming to me asking where he's going to go, and I'm answering, I don't know. And I was riding with him to school, trying to look at his shirt, trying to peep what he's trying to do, where he's going to go, but he kept it a complete secret for me and my family, you know. But, I mean, I think on Andre's decision, I feel like it was more of a family-oriented decision. You know, he realized that me and him going through this experience together, him being able to show me the ropes as far as how hard work goes and what it's like to be in college, I feel like that was something that went into his decision.
I mean, given your family background, given that you're from the area, given that he had a chance to play with you, I mean, that could not have gone any other way, right? Were you really concerned that he might go someplace else?
Yeah. Like I said, they came late. Ohio State came late, and that was one of the big things Andre was telling me is why he didn't want to go to Ohio State, because they didn't show him as much love early as the other programs did that were recruiting him. I agree with his decision as far as that goes. You know, you want to go where you feel like you'll be loved and appreciated, and you feel like this is the best place.
For sure. For sure. So finally, what's it mean then that he decided to end up playing there? You're playing with your brother at Ohio State. Is that pretty much like living the dream?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is a dream. You know, a lot of people don't be able to get the chance to do this, and us being able to, it's just surreal.
Averaging 14 points and 9 rebounds per game this season, Ohio State's number 24 in the coaches poll. And again, they've got a big one coming up on Thursday night, 7 p.m. Eastern. Ohio State at number 20, Iowa. Caleb Wesson, my guest. Caleb, great job. Really nice to have you on the show.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Nice job. Appreciate it, too. That's how you close the show. Big man for Ohio State. Preseason all Big Ten. And he took a look around, had some NBA workouts, and they told him, look, you have the skill level. There's no doubt you'll play in this league. But you got to get your weight down a little bit, and man, he's gone to work and having a really big year and a chance to play with his brother. So I want to reset really quickly. Before the end of the week, I'm going to announce that we're rebooting. I don't want to say that it's a world tour in the sense that I've got 10 dates, but I can give you at least one date. I can give you a town. I can give you a date. I can give you a venue. Where do you think it's going to be? If you had to guess. Already one person, Damasio, said, hey, Rome, this is easy. Albuquerque all day long. An original four affiliate on the same station for 25 years. Why would you go anywhere else? Damasio, man, don't rip my thunder. I got to make it official. Hey, Rome, why should I own it? It's the Mets' fault for paying me so much money. They allowed me to afford things like boars. And a ranch. Hurt on company time or hurt on company dime, heal on company dime. Signed, Yoannis. John in Huntington Beach.
Yo.
Hey, John.
It's not my fault. It's their fault. They pay me so much money I can afford things like wild boars and a ranch. Rome, I think it's great that Breeze and Brady are going to continue to keep playing football. Screw those young guys waiting to play QB. Regards, the old guy at the office who doesn't do a damn thing and just won't retire. As well as Ritt. Eric in Colorado. The problem with that logic is Drew Brees had one of his best years ever. Tom Brady definitely is showing some slippage. Brady's not the same quarterback that he was. But again, part of the reason for that is he doesn't have the weapons around him that he's had in the past. So if you're Tom Brady and you're looking around right now and you've got some other opportunities and the Patriots aren't showing you the love that you want to be shown, even more importantly, they're not showing you the money that you want to be shown, if you're Tom Brady, could you go someplace else? Well, you could go someplace else, not better weapons, right? The Chargers would afford him better skill around him, but maybe not up front. The Raiders might even be able to afford him better skill around him. But do they, either one of these teams, really afford him a better shot at winning a Super Bowl? And isn't that what that's about? Legacy, winning again? Or is it about respect and telling you how much you mean to them? Because you know that Bill Belichick's not doing that. Romy, I don't see a problem with these baseball players taking the law into their own hands. It worked out well for me. Regards, John McClain, dropping a C4 down the Nakatomi elevator shaft. Geoff, the guy was a cop. He did not take the law into his own hands. He was a cop.
Come to the coast. We get together. Have a few laughs.
Hey, Rome. I'm rolling with any city in Utah at 40-1. Those are very familiar numbers if you see me working. Mitch from Buffalo. No. No, Mitch, I do not see you working. Mitch, I never see you working. One, you don't have a job. Hell. Now, dude, I don't understand any of your content. I don't understand your emails at all. I do not see you working. Why would Utah be 40-1? Your call brought to you by Grainger. Wherever work gets done, Grainger is there with the industrial supplies, safety products, and time-saving services that you need to keep your business running smoothly. See for yourself when you visit Grainger.com. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I have a beef with red wine because I'm super allergic to it. I also have a beef with whiners.
Like people who whine or people who drink wine?
Both. Kathy Lee can go bite my... This story is a non-story. It doesn't even deserve to be talked about. And then they cover the story and continue for 10 minutes or more, continuously saying, this is a non-story. We shouldn't even be talking about this, and continue on talking about it. What a waste. Don't bring it up if it's not worthy.
I just like to say that all those clones maybe that are calling in saying there's no big deal about the the Astros and about how LA probably had sour grapes and all that. Well, in the words of Tony Soprano, I got your sour grapes right here. Anyway, that's my beef, Jim. This is Bob in LA.
Yeah, I know, Bob.
Strong as horse ready.
I welcomed you to the program by saying, "Hey, Bob in LA, what's your beef?" The clones gloss that the okay boomer, what's your beef segment. Why? Because they were all like 80? D-Rod 2203 tweets, 99.9% sure that the tour stop will be in Wisco. Maybe. I've got a son who goes to school there. That's it. I got to get out. The announcement's coming up before the end of the week. Thanks for listening. You have yourself an amazing day. See you right back here tomorrow.